This is fun.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's put our hands together for this knowledge.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the eighth wonder of the world. The flow of the century, always timeless. Thank you for coming out tonight. You could have been anywhere in the world, but you're here with us. We appreciate that. It starts with one thing. I don't know why. It doesn't even matter how hard you try. Keep that in mind. I designed this rhyme to explain in due time. All I know, time is a valuable thing. Watch it fly by as the pendulum swings. Watch it count down to the end of the day. The clock ticks life away and it's so unreal. I didn't look out below. I watched the time go right out the window. Trying to hold on and didn't even know I wasted it all just to watch you go. I kept everything inside and even though I tried, it all fell apart.
It is the Ear Rape Podcast, brought to you by BeavaTheMadDoors.com. I am Ryan. I'm joined tonight by Jonathan. How's it going, man?
Pretty good. Welcome to number 100.
Yeah, podcast number 100. It's hard to believe. Like we said, I guess it's time for us to quit. This is the 100th this is the 100th podcast that I have recorded and produced and edited and published and all that. Obviously, I'm not on the basketball podcast, and Jonathan's on 75% of these, but since I've taken over, we've done 100 of them, believe it or not. And before we get started, I want to thank everybody who does listen to the podcast. When we started and we started getting numbers back in 2015, our numbers were in the teens and 20s. And we were always joking that we had two loyal listeners, and now we're in the hundreds and sometimes thousands, depending on what's going on, who we have as guests, who we played, stuff like that. And the good news is the numbers are fairly consistent, which means that there's a large group of you guys who are consistently listening to us, which means a lot. We really appreciate that. It makes it fun for us when we know that, and especially when you work for VTM and not get paid or get paid a whole lot. So we really appreciate it. We'll start off with we're going to get into West Virginia, obviously. This is the West Virginia preview. We'll talk about some articles that we posted throughout the week. We'll go over stats and predictions and around the Big 12. But first and foremost, let's talk a little bit about what went on earlier this week at Texas Tech. We've had a couple of posts about it. Jonathan, you actually went through and gave everybody an update on one of your posts, and you actually put in a link to where you can go and financially support Officer East's family. He leaves behind a wife and two kids. So what was that link? And it's by our former site manager, is that correct?
Yeah, Kyle Jacobson, who was the previous site manager before Zach. He's a guy who he really loves Lubbock. Works for the Chamber of Commerce there, and pretty much as soon as it happened, he wanted to help somehow, and so he threw up a quick GoFundMe. He wanted to raise $1,000 for the family. And he said that he would match up to $1,000. And when I saw it, it was a slow day at work for me, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and throw up a link to it. So I went ahead and I contacted him. I was like, hey, do you mind if I go ahead and just throw this up in a quick article? He'd be like, yeah, that'd be great, because we just have a lot more reach than a single person has. Between our Twitter and our Facebook and people that come to the site directly. And when we're averaging 4,000 or 5,000 views on a slow day, then there's a lot of people that can see stuff like that. And I don't know if you remember back when the Dallas police officer shooting happened. Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago. Russ Martin, local DJ here in Dallas, little bit of a shock jock, but when it comes to officers, he's really, really generous. His foundation always supports. And the big reason he does that is because even though these officers do get money from their departments, there's so much red tape to go through that they don't see this money for weeks or months. And unfortunately, the families need some unexpected money right away. For anyone that's been close to any kind of funeral or memorial service, they're not cheap. And so it was a great thing for Kyle to go ahead and do that. So I threw up that article about the time that he hit that $1,000 mark. And this was Tuesday, early afternoon. And right now, they're at $10,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
And then he was actually contacted by a couple of the officers' family, close friends of the family. And that money, because he was going to hand deliver the money to the University Police Department. And it has now changed. He's going to actually be giving that money straight to Officer East's wife.
That's fantastic.
And so that money's going straight to the family, right where it needs to go. No passing checks around, stuff like that. So just a couple things I noted in the article. When something happens to a close-knit group of people, they all come together. And you won't find much more of a close-knit group than the Red Raiders.
Yeah, when it comes to campus incidents, you know, we all feel it in various ways. The Virginia Tech shooting happened on my birthday. And we were in class, obviously. I was still in college when that happened. And it was a pretty difficult experience when you're on campus and you're hearing about these things. And there becomes a lot of, some false alarms and everybody's on edge. And like with any major incident like that, but it's so far away. You know Virginia is so far away. My family's from Virginia. Virginia is just you feel for it, but it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. Kind of like how we as Americans, for right or for wrong, think about Europe and the Middle East and Asia. It's just kind of out of sight, out of minds, and we take it differently when it's on our home soil. And for a lot of us, we still think of Texas Tech and Lubbock as our home. And when we hear stuff that happens in our home, I know I felt the same way as if someone had actually come into my own house. It's a place that we bring our kids to. Some of us who don't have kids and will want to in the future, to go to games and to share the experience and pageantry of campus, get them interested in, hey, I want to come to Texas Tech. I want to hang out at the sub, and I see all the college people that I look up to, and I'm talking about from my kid's perspective. And I took him to his first football game and showed him the stadium and Raider Red and got to stand next to the Masked Rider, and he loved every minute of it. And you don't necessarily think like something like that's going to happen. So for those that have donated, we thank you very much. It means a lot to the family. For those that aren't in a place to, I know it's cliche, but thoughts and prayers are always, always beneficial with the metaphysical part of it. So that's where we'll leave that. We do need to kind of move on to West Virginia. Hopefully we can add some levity to it, because in the wake of such tragedy, hopefully we can bring some enjoyment and excitement and kind of a little bit of escapism with this football game, because that's what ultimately college football is. It's just escapism. Sometimes we take it too seriously, but win or lose, it just kind of gets us out of our daily grind and worrying about the world for a couple hours. So Texas Tech goes to Morgantown. Morgantown's always been a frustrating place for
anybody. Everybody.
It wasn't for Kingsbury in his first year. Texas Tech handled business when Kingsbury came in and set the world on fire and kind of did himself a disservice by raising expectations to such an ungodly level.
Starting 7-0.
Yeah, starting 7-0. They had the sights and the sounds every single week, and I think the week after that was he said it all week, was fortune favors the bold. Like, he was going to do all this play calling and aggressive play calling, and he wants the offense, the ball in his hands to win the game. He would rather on 4th-and-1 go for it than punt it. And they won the game. They were 7-0, ranked 10th in the country going into Oklahoma. The next couple of years, he kind of shied away from fortune favors the bold. And we've talked about it on the pod numerous times. You can go back through the 100 and find him, because that was a lot of what we were talking about, is he needs to get back to that aggressive, win the game, to stop trying not to lose mentality. And, especially when he didn't have a defense, but now he's got a defense, so that's something, right?
That's right. Now, it's something that, like you said, we want to see, but then all of a sudden we've got this here and we're doing well and we're not doing necessarily fortune favors the bold. We're just playing more efficiently.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sure we'll see some more of that if it calls for it. We're in a great position right now. We're not kind of middling in the road. We're kind of really, everything's out there in front of us that we want. We've got a good stretch of games, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, but everybody in the Big 12 is beatable. And we have been saying this before everybody was beaten, because there's only one undefeated left. But everybody can be beaten, and beaten more than once. Now, when you go back to 2013, that was led by Mr. Davis Webb, who lit the world on fire that week with, I think he set a freshman record, broke Mayfield's freshman record for passing in a game.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
And oddly enough, Mahomes hasn't beaten West Virginia. We should have beat them in 2015. That was one of the fortune favors the bold moments. We had it 4th-and-3 on our own 47, something like that. And we ended up punting it instead of going for it. And West Virginia burned the rest of the clock and kicked a 50-some yarder to win it. And then in 2016, we had a chance to kind of hang around and be a part of that game. We lost it in Morgantown. And then, obviously, the debacle last year that we just didn't show up for.
It's because we were waiting for this year.
That's right. Yeah, don't waste effort on all that. But this has all the markings of a really, really good win for Texas Tech. West Virginia's kind of down this year, believe it or not. I know on paper these teams are very evenly matched. They're almost identical in defense. They're almost identical in offense. How they do it is a little bit different. Texas Tech is better against the run than West Virginia. West Virginia is better against the pass than Texas Tech. But if you actually look at the schedule, Texas Tech has had a much more difficult schedule, and they've done a lot better than West Virginia. West Virginia, I mentioned this in the mailbag because someone was asking about the realistic expectations of Texas Tech beating West Virginia. And I said, it's very realistic. They opened with Virginia Tech in Blacksburg. That was at home, right? Neutral site.
Yeah, that was Redskins Field.
Yeah, I remember now. And they lost by 7. Nothing to be upset. Good game. Nothing to be upset about. Then they play East Carolina. They win big. Then they play Delaware State. They win big. Then they play Kansas, and it's a lot closer than the experts thought. Kansas just ran all over West Virginia, and then West Virginia pulled away late. And then they play TCU. So they played 5 games. They've only played 2 actual, I think, good teams in Virginia Tech and TCU. They've lost both of them, and they've lost both contests 31-24. Is it just me, or does it seem like this West Virginia team is good, but not that good?
Yeah, I think a lot of that is true. When you're looking at two teams, the easiest way to compare them is see if they've played a similar opponent. And we both have played Kansas, and both teams played in Kansas. And the big thing that stands out to me is Kansas running back had 36 carries for 291 yards. And against us, I don't think that happened.
Not even close.
Let me pull that up. He had 10 carries for 65 yards. So, it seems like our rush defense is so much better. And it also seems like there's a really good chance that we're going to be really able to run on them.
You would think that we really kind of commit to it with how we have Stockton, Nisby, Trey King, and Felton, if you just keep rotating those guys through and just pounding the rock, as much as I hate to say it, you got to feel that if West Virginia does what it does did last year, drop eight and playing that soft zone where you're having trouble, you know, getting the ball in space and they're actually getting pressure with three guys, you would hope that we would able to take advantage of that box like Kingsbury has said that they haven't been able to in the past, and really attack that, force them to bring people up in the box and then attack it, attack in the passing game the way you want. The only downside to that is when you are a pass-first team like Texas Tech has been in the modern era, so Leach forward, one of the main things that Leach has tried to do, even Neil Brown has tried to do, and obviously Kingsbury has tried to do, big games on the road is to get your quarterback in a rhythm early.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why you see like the very first pass is a quick pass screen just to get a completion, just to get a few yards and kind of create that rhythm. You start seeing you saw Mahomes struggle and you've seen Webb struggle. We've seen Chimonek struggle in those lulls where you kind of get away from the pass and you're trying to run a little bit more. We've seen that a couple times in a couple different games, where the passes just haven't been there. They've been off. And it's just kind of the rhythm of the game, the ebbs and flows, and it's just out of sync. Any quarterback will tell you, if I'm throwing every single down, I'm going to get in a rhythm. It's like a pitcher. It's like a big time shooter like Steph Curry. If Steph Curry in basketball is only taking one shot every 4 minutes, I don't think he's going to be as hot as if he's every other time going down the court, he's throwing up a shot. He's got to get into that rhythm. So you kind of want to have a good balance with that.
Yeah, and I think that this team is probably the most balanced that we've been since Washington, DeAndre Washington, mm-hmm. and probably a little bit more dynamic in the run game. We've got the Thunder and the Lightning able to kind of change pace depending on who we throw out there. And then you have plays that are passes but are basically running plays, little shovel passes, stuff like that, that we may be able to take advantage of in this game and really put some pressure on the home team.
Yeah, it was really interesting. There was the outside the huddle this mm-hmm. week with Texas Tech, and I'm not exactly it escapes me at the moment, but they were talking about the Thunder and Lightning bit with, I think it was Justin Stockton. Justin okay. Stockton was talking about how he's obviously a dad. He just got recently married. He's a full-time family man, full-time student athlete, and you know how the running game came about, and that they actually have started calling Stockton and Nisby Lightning and Thunder, respectively. And they asked, where did that come from? And he actually said, oh, you know, we saw it around here and there a few months ago on social media, and we've been calling them that since at least July, since we knew Nisby was coming and what kind of size that he had. So
right.
Not to toot our own horn, but hopefully they saw it from us, because that's kind of cool. And it's kind of cool that they came up with it from outside the program, a lot of times they'll say, oh, they came up with it, or the coach said it or something.
Created by the program for media.
Yeah, it's good to see that, whether it's from us or not, that it was very organic, that the players are out there, they see what people are talking about. Kingsbury referenced it in the press conference after the Kansas game, that said that it's not surprising because of how his team is doing, because they've sat around for the last year or so hearing everybody say that they're the worst team in the conference, and that they took it personal. So, you know, they know what's going on. Anytime fans speak negatively about them or say that they're horrible or that they should fire, you know, Kingsbury or whatever, obviously they hear about it. I mean, these are kids, relatively speaking, compared to some of us, but they're going to hear it. They're going to take it emotionally, and they're going to use it for better or for worse.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how they respond to this game. This is another game that's probably been marked on the calendar. There were many marked on the calendar this year. But it's not easy to go into Morgantown and win. There's a reason that not many people do it. There's a reason we haven't done it in 4 years. Didn't do it last time we were there. It's a unique atmosphere, to say the least. It's a far away trip. It's not like, well, everything for Tech is far away. But it's not a quick flight to Stillwater. Or Norman, it's all the way, or Fort Worth, it's all the way over on the East Coast. We're in a different time zone, and all sorts of stuff. And to anybody on Twitter, yes, West Virginia is a different state than Virginia. If you don't know that, then go back to school.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting of why there became a West Virginia outside of Virginia, why they split it up, because it was all one state at one time.
Right.
So I suggest y'all Google it, or as they say in Lego Batman, probably worth a Google. Sorry, I watched that with my kids today. I always crack up at that part. Obviously Dana Holgorsen, it's a lot for Kingsbury. Holgorsen was Kingsbury's mentor, at Houston. He obviously was a Texas Tech coach at one time. There's a lot of ties to Lubbock. Obviously, we talked about before the Oklahoma State game how Holgorsen was the new OC at Oklahoma State, brought the recently fired Leach in, the recently graduated Graham Harrell in, installed the offense. And then he only spent 1 year at Oklahoma State, and then he got the head coaching job at West Virginia. And his experience in West Virginia has kind of been tumultuous. He had some struggles there in the first year after the former coach, I think, hung 70 in a bowl game on somebody. And there's this kind of like interim OC, kind of the head coach. Hey, you need to walk away. It was really weird. And the fan base didn't know what to think about it. A lot of them wanted the old coach to stick around. A lot of them were ready for Holgorsen to take over full time. And then when the struggles started happening there in his first year, a lot of people thought they made a mistake and they needed to get rid of him. And the expectations were high. A couple of years ago, they were ready to fire him because he was struggling so much. If I go back, let me see the schedule. Holgorsen took over in 2012, if I have my math correct. And they went 7-6 his first year.
Made a bowl game.
They did make a bowl game. But it was, yeah, after, that can't be right, can it?
They went 7-6. They must have made a bowl game.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about Holgorsen being the head coach.
He was there the year before Cliff came to Lubbock, correct?
Yeah, they say 2011. Yeah, 2011 to present. Yeah. Okay, I had it right. So 2011. So 2011, they go 10-3. He was kind of an interim, like I said. Go back and look at that. 2012 is his first main year. They started 5-0. Then they came to Texas Tech, and I'll give credit where it's due, one of Tuberville's best games. Tech blew out then number 5 West Virginia. and they proceeded to lose five straight games. They lost to Texas Tech. They lost to Kansas State. They lost to TCU. They lost to Oklahoma State. They lost to Oklahoma. And I believe that this was the first year that West Virginia was in the Big 12.
I think so.
It was that, yeah, it was that switchover.
That was the year Geno Smith was there, right?
Yes, it was his senior year. And then they finished up the season beating Iowa State and Kansas to become bowl eligible.
Ooh.
And then they lose to Syracuse in the New Era Pinstripe Bowl. So a lot of people didn't know what to think. And then come 2013, West Virginia went 4-8. 4-8. Missed the bowl game. A lot of people clamoring for Dana Holgorsen that he's got to right this ship. The following year, 2014, they go 7-6. They get that gift win at Texas Tech. They finish the season with Iowa State to, you know, go from there. And then 2015, you start to see the improvement. They went from 7-6, then 8-5. And then last year, they were 10-3. So his seat is obviously cooled. But for a while there, yeah, Dana wasn't the most popular person on campus from where West Virginia was in the Big East to coming to the Big 12 and struggling. And now they've kind of cemented themselves as kind of the perennial third or fourth best team in the conference behind Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and TCU.
Yeah, they're never really, at the end of the season, they're never challenging for the title. But at the beginning of every year, it's always like, oh, maybe this year will be.
Kind of like Texas Tech in the 2000s.
Yes.
It's kind of where it is. And I know a lot of Tech fans have a problem with that, you know, we were always thinking about it midseason and then would always get smacked down by Texas or Oklahoma or whatever. But I mean, you got to give props to Dana. He's changed a lot. He's been one of those guys that has really gone against himself to make this program successful. You know, mm-hmm. bringing in certain guys to make it a more defensive and physical team. Going to the run game a little bit more than he is accustomed to. Not calling the plays like he wants to early in his career. Kind of like we've seen the progression with Mike Gundy and now Cliff Kingsbury, even though Kingsbury's still calling the plays. And you'll probably start hearing people in Norman call for Lincoln Riley to stop calling the plays and hand that over to somebody else.
Just be a head coach.
And then when you are a head coach, give all the credit to your coordinators when you start having success. But they're 3-2 this year. They're 1-1 in the conference, so they're tied with Texas Tech. They're all tied for third. But I like that we're playing at 11. It seems like Texas Tech, you know, in Lubbock, earlier the game, the better for the away team type of thing.
Yeah, we played early in Houston, and we were able to kind of start a little bit hotter than they were. We played early in Kansas. Not that there were many fans there to begin with, but I just think it's easier to take the crowd out of the game. They haven't been tailgating for 8 hours. Well, maybe they have, but they haven't been tailgating all morning and part of the afternoon if you're playing that 2:30 slot, or even longer if you're playing a 6 or 7 o'clock slot. Your routine is interrupted anyways because you're on the road. We were on the road last week with an early game, and so the routine should be the same as last week. So I think that it just helps us out a little bit more.
You also have to wonder about West Virginia's mentality. We've talked a lot about losing a big game, especially on the road, where you kind of may be emotionally drained. And how do you respond the next week? We saw in 2013 where Texas Tech lost a close game on the road in Norman to snap their undefeated run. And it just seemed like the next week at Oklahoma State, they didn't have the same emotional fire, the same energy level. It was kind of like the air was let out of the balloon so to speak. And we've seen that a couple of times with teams around the country where after a big game, they went to TCU, they played a ranked team, a top 10 team, they lost a close game late, you know, within one possession. How does this team respond now, 3-2, coming home? They're no longer ranked. They're playing a ranked team, but, you know, are we going to see them come out flat?
It's quite possible. I think it happened to Tech last year in the Oklahoma State game, or after that game, because I believe the next game was in Ames.
Yes.
And the team just, it looked like they had given up at that point.
Or their heads were still in Stillwater.
Or that too. And a couple of the players had been benched, and it just wasn't a good feel around everything. And so, yeah, I think this game, the pressure is definitely on the Mountaineers.
And it's an interesting little run here that they, after us, let's just say they lose to us and they go 3-3. They've got Baylor, Oklahoma State, Iowa State, Kansas State, and then they end the season with Texas and Oklahoma. So
they'll get back on track in Waco.
I mean, they're looking at, yeah, they'll get back on track for, but they're looking at maybe a 6-6 season if they lose to us, mm-hmm. maybe if a 7-5 season, definitely coming down from that 10-3 year last year. And you kind of have to think that maybe, although talented, Will Grier, maybe not the same quarterback. He may be a lot like Kyle Allen, who was really, really highly touted out of high school, but after the transfer, after bouncing around here and there, maybe he's just not as good as everybody has expected or thought. Let's see his stats, actually. 63% completion percentage, 16 TDs, 4 INTs. A lot of that has came in East Carolina, Delaware State. Let's take a look at what he did against Virginia Tech. And you look up the one against TCU last week.
Okay.
So Will Grier did really well against Virginia Tech. He went 31-53 for 371.
Boy, I wish your mom was here.
And 3 touchdowns. Sorry about that. Stupid autoplay on ESPN as I'm looking up. You didn't hear that, Jonathan, but everybody else did. That's going to be hard to edit that out, so I apologize. Stupid autoplay.
Just repeat what you were going to say.
Yeah. 371 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception. So, obviously, really good numbers against Virginia Tech, a ranked Virginia Tech team on in a neutral site. What did he do? What were his numbers against TCU?
That's very interesting because he had 366 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception. Went 25-45.
What did he do it against Kansas?
Let's see. Kansas, 25-39 for 347, 2-1.
2-1. So he's almost averaging a pick a game.
Yes, he's had a pick in every game other than East Carolina.
Yeah.
And he's going up against the number one turnover creating defense in the Big 12.
Yeah.
And yes, it's Texas Tech. So
darn
weird.
Right it is. So I really think that, you know, with how high that this Texas Tech team has been thinking of them, I mean, everybody, it's been really weird to see, you know, after a game, you see all the players come on Twitter and they're tweeting out things about Texas Tech versus everybody, that they're, you know, not satisfied and that they're hungry. As you said, they've had this game circled on the calendar for a while now. It'll be really interesting to see what this team, this defense does coming out. And if they put up a performance like they did against Houston, or any performance really, if they put up any performance outside of Oklahoma State, what kind of game this can turn into is going in Texas Tech's favor.
Yeah, I mean, we're turning the we're getting the ball in turnovers, and West Virginia is turning the ball over. I saw that some of their fans are concerned about just how much they have been turning it over this year.
Well, let's look at their turnover margin, shall we?
Let's see.
Who's going to get there first? Texas Tech is obviously has a +7 turnover margin. Not as good as Charlie Strong's South Florida team.
South Flowers?
Yeah. they have a +11 margin. Bama and Penn State have +12, but South Florida's done it in one less game. Oh, I take it back. Texas Tech has a +9 margin. So I take it back. Let's see, West Virginia. West Virginia is ranked 50th in the country with a +1 margin. They've lost 7, including 3 fumbles, 4 INTs.
Yeah, I think they've had some issues with special teams and fumbling, from what I could gain from reading some of the comments from their fans. The one thing that they do have going for them is the number one receiving touchdown player in the country.
Interestingly enough, it's that quarterback that Lane Kiffin offered when he was like in eighth grade or something, which is really, really quite spectacular because I never knew what happened to that guy. It'll be good. I mean, if we're able to stop the run, you should see a lot of that underneath zone. If we go to man, you'll have bracket coverage over top. I think Tech will sit there and say, we're not going to let that guy beat us. If you're going to beat us, you're going to have to go to your third or fourth wide receiver. And if you're David Gibbs, you've had enough experience with decent runners, the guy from Houston, the guy from Oklahoma State, obviously the guy from Kansas who came off that big game against West Virginia, to sit there and say, I feel confident in my front six or my front seven to really kind of keep the run game in check and force them to beat you in the air. So that's where your turnover is going to get. Be really, really interesting. I'm so excited for this game. I cannot wait to see what Texas Tech is able to do defensively against West Virginia. All I can say is for my eyes, West Virginia better not come out in a bunch of yellow.
I know they're striping out the stadium.
I hope they come out in blue.
You don't want urinal yellow?
No, it's hard. I remember watching a basketball game last year, and it was, I think, the Mavs at Golden State, and Golden State was wearing their gold uniforms at home, and the gold uniforms on top of their gold, everything gold on the court, it was like gold overload.
What would you say about blue helmets, gold jerseys, and blue pants?
That's fine.
Okay, because that's what they're wearing.
I don't want the yellow helmet.
the yellow jersey, the yellow pants.
Yeah, I mean, they looked weird even last year when they came to Texas Tech and they were wearing the yellow and the white and the yellow.
It says they're wearing their old gold jerseys.
Oh, so it's going to be like burnt gold? It's going to be poop
sure.
Gold?
The Twitter video, it looks like they're normal yellow jersey.
Interesting. So while we're on uniforms, what's Tech gonna come out with? Now I say that because there's only been one team that Texas Tech has worn the same uniforms for at all, and that was Kansas. They wore all white in 13 and 15, and they changed that this year with the black, white, black. So are they? They've already done gray, white, gray, and all white. So are they gonna? What are they gonna do this time?
I think we're gonna go white helmet, white jersey, red pants.
Interesting.
Or we could go white, white, black.
We've never done that before. That would be awesome because we've never done that combination before under Kingsbury or any time, I believe.
Or we could go all red. We are the Red Raiders, after all.
Well, you can't wear a color block on the road unless you're in the NFL doing a color rush game.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Unless the other team is wearing white.
Okay.
One team has to be white.
So I think because their helmets are a pretty pretty dull, flat blue, I don't think we'll wear our black helmets. Just because I think the colors are a little bit too similar. We wore black last week because Kansas was wearing the bright navy blue.
With the white helmets.
We were wearing black helmets last week, weren't we?
I know. Kansas was wearing the white helmets.
I thought they were in blue.
No, they were wearing white helmets.
Okay. Shows how much I watched the game.
I was listening to it, so I couldn't tell you.
But yeah, I don't think that the black helmet would... I think it's too close to their blue helmet.
I like how you said that their blue helmet is the dull... what was it? Dull flat blue or something?
Yes.
The millennials call that matte.
Well, I'm not... Well, actually, I am. But...
okay, so give me your give me a key to the game or keys to the game for Texas Tech, and we'll come back after we preview the Big 12 and talk about the Texas Tech predictions.
Well, I've been having the same keys to the game, and it's turnovers. But I think this week it's going to be winning the line of scrimmage. I think our offensive line needs to push back on their defensive line. So we can run the ball a little bit better, other than Kansas. Sometimes Kansas is just an outlier. And then on the same page, I want to get to Greer. I want our defensive line to really push them back. And so I'm going to say a win that line.
I think that's a great thing because that was what I was going to say. In 2014, we lost because they were able to run the ball. In 2015, we lost because we lost the line of scrimmage. In 2016, we were overmatched, especially in the trenches, forcing Mahomes to throw when he didn't want to, for him to be so panicked in the pocket or outside the pocket that he was missing wide open receivers. That would have made down and distance a little bit more manageable. So I think we need to set the tone in the trenches. And I guess I will say, since you said that, I'll say what I said last week about setting the tone on offense or defense with a big hit, whether it's Nisby running over a guy, you know, searching for contact, or a big hit, or, you know, tackle for a loss, something early that sets the tone for the defense that can kind of spread throughout the entire team and get them ready to go. A bigger slate for Big 12 games this week. Obviously, the one that I'm most interested in, and I'm not even kidding, is Kansas and Iowa State. I'm not kidding because I love this game, and it's a lot like watching 6-6 bowl teams play. Outside of the stupid announcers that won't stop promoting the national championship or the college football playoff during that game, sometimes it's the best games of the entire bowl season, and that's why I'm always super excited about seeing these guys play.
And I think there's a little bit of extra rivalry between those teams because of basketball lately.
Oh, really?
Iowa State has really come on in the past, I'd say 5 years, as one of the top programs in the Big 12, and Kansas is always at the top. So I think there's just a little bit of extra.
I do remember some good games between these two, Iowa State and Kansas. But I am looking forward to it because I love to see, one, how is Iowa State, kind of some preview action for next week, how does Iowa State respond after their big upset? How do they look playing a weaker opponent after beating Oklahoma in there in Norman? The other side of it is Kansas. How are they responding? They've got an alum as their head coach. They've got, an alum as their defensive coordinator in Clint Bowen. They brought in Doug Meacham to boost the offense, and they just got blown out at home, and they're on a four-game losing streak. How do they respond? What kind of burn it down, burn the Big 12 down? Are we going to see if Kansas beats Iowa State this weekend? I don't think it'll happen, but I think it would be quite interesting to see how Iowa State responds. So Iowa State is favored by 23. Do you think Iowa State covers?
That's a tough one because obviously Kansas on offense didn't look good at all last week, but they were able to score on West Virginia. I'm going to say Iowa State does not cover that, but not by much. I think they'll almost cover that.
Kansas actually has a better offense yardage wise than Iowa State.
Interesting. I know the first few games, I think during their non-con, Iowa State was putting 40 plus on everybody. But since conference play has started, they've kind of slowed down a little bit.
They put 42 on UNI, 41 on Iowa, 41 on Akron, 7 against Texas, 38 against OU. So, yeah, I mean, they've been putting up points. And I think part of that is they've been doing a lot with their defense. One of the reasons why they were able to get back into that game against Oklahoma is a really good defense battle. I mean, they were down 14 points early. I mean, before we blinked an eye, you know, and everybody thought, oh, OU's going to just destroy Iowa State. And then you turn around and they're slowly working their way back. And Heisman candidate, which he shouldn't be any longer, even though he still is, Baker Mayfield was just pretty much shut down.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting thing with this game, I think, is going to be the weather factor. Looks like it's showing 69 in rain.
Oh, I love rain games. Call me old school, but there are some things that I can't stand worse than, hey, let's have the Super Bowls. Obviously, I understand it's money and everything, but you never hear about the perfect game played in the perfect conditions from 2004. But you remember the Ice Bowl. You remember the Tuck game with Brady in the snow against the Raiders. You remember the Mud Bowl back in the 50s. I mean, the games with the worst weather are the games that you remember the most because they're the most fun to watch. They're the most interesting. They're the most where anything can go either way. But it kind of gets in the way of your halftime shows and your scantily clad halftime performer shaking her or whatever.
Cowboys Dolphins Thanksgiving ice.
Yeah.
Ice on the field.
Yeah,
everybody sliding around. It was a pointless, meaningless regular season game between teams from different conferences, but people still remember that 20, 25 years later.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Them moving, or clearing away the snow for the field goal there at the end. And yeah, I mean, God, love that stuff. So I'll be watching that just for the rain aspect. Give me all the weather.
And all the other games are going to be sunny in the Big 12. So
great. Number six, TCU pays a visit to little Manhattan. Kansas State is a 6.5-point underdog. Does the Necromancer have any control over Gary Patterson? Now, interestingly enough, TCU lost this game 2 years ago. Obercrom, I think his name was, their fantastic kicker that never missed anything, was shanking things left and right in this game. And I say they lost. They may have won on the last second field goal, but they were about to lose big time.
They've got the over-under on this game at 50, and I think that's about 10 points too high. Because I don't like Kenny Hill. His stats are not that great, even though somehow he's in an award watch for quarterback.
He's in the Heisman consideration, according to ESPN.
Yeah. I think TCU does win this game, but I think it's a nail biter, and it's a 1 or a 2 point win.
Well, TCU is the last Big 12 undefeated, and right now they have the best chance of making it into the playoffs. So,
until they come to Lubbock.
Yeah, every game, yeah, exactly. But every game for TCU obviously is magnified because of where they are right now, especially after beating Oklahoma State. If they had lost Oklahoma State, they still may be where Oklahoma is in the 12 to 15 range, and Oklahoma State would all have all that pressure. But squarely on Gary Patterson, so it'll be interesting to watch that game as well. The other game, and shocking. This is shocking. This is shocking to me because I grew up an Oklahoma fan. Hate to say it, recovering Oklahoma fan. But Oklahoma and Texas, it's been so bad the last several years because of where Texas has been compared to Oklahoma that the networks have not put this game at 2:30. Where it's traditionally the best. Everybody loves it at 2:30 because they get to tailgate, they get to go to the fair, and then after the game, they get to go to the fair at night when it's all lit up, and it's kind of a cool thing. A lot of times, they were trying to blame it on, well, we don't want the drunk fans in the fair doing all this stuff. It's like it was never a problem before, it didn't seem like. But this year, they have moved it back to 2:30, to 2:30 start, which I think is really cool. Oklahoma coming off their huge loss at home. A lot of chatter out of Norman from my contacts up there saying that Lincoln Riley didn't handle his first big win at Ohio State well with how they came out against Baylor. And they said they
haven't been the same.
Yeah, he said, and he hasn't handled his first bye week well either, coming off the bye week and getting beaten by Iowa State. Usually growing pains that you see with a first-year head coach, but also when you're Oklahoma, number three in the country, and you're expecting to get in the college football playoff, not the type of thing that you want out of your first-year head coach. Cool thing, they're going up against Texas. Another Texas has their first-year head coach. Not first year as he's a head coach, but they're at Texas and Tom Herman. I don't even remember the last time that they had two new coaches.
Well, you wouldn't. I actually saw this on Twitter. I forgot to tell you because we talked about it last week. It was 1947.
Well, according to Bryce, I was alive then. But apparently not. So, 1940s, huh?
Yep. Yeah, I believe it's either been 47 years or it was 1947. Okay. Either way, you were not alive.
And that game was probably like 3-0 or 2-0 on a safety. But this game is very interesting. It's a lot closer than I would have thought. Texas is only an underdog by 8 points.
Yeah. A lot of people are picking Texas to upset OU. I think people are starting to buy into the Texas defense.
Mm-hmm.
And how Mayfield has struggled at times against much less effective defenses. I'm looking at you, Cyclones, and Baylor. a lot of people, I think, are thinking that Texas is going to be able to hang with them. But I just don't see Texas winning without scoring more points on defense than they do on offense.
This game might throw Oklahoma's season completely upside down.
Mm-hmm.
If they lose this game,
they're done.
You're gonna hear calls for Riley immediately.
Oh, yeah.
His seat is gonna be so hot losing to Texas after losing to Iowa State at home. They'll drop into the 20s at least in ranking if they lose this game. With how they've performed against
Texas, will be like ranked 10th.
Yeah, no, they'll be in the college football playoff automatically. with the title Texas back. But you're going to also see calls for Mike Stoops to be fired. Mike Stoops is one of the last remaining guys from that coaching staff. He came back. Everybody thought it was Brent Venables that was the problem after Mike Stoops left. obviously Venables is having a great time in Clemson, at Clemson, being their defensive coordinator. So now they're starting to see that it may be, in fact, Mike Stoops. He's been on the hot seat for years. One of his biggest protectors has been his brother. Bob Stoops isn't there anymore. To get the heat off of himself, he may have to fire, pull a Mike Leach and fire his defensive coordinator mid-season after the way they performed against Baylor, Iowa State, and then Texas if they lose this one. Even though they lost, or even though they beat Baylor, it seemed like a loss. It felt like a loss.
And then even if you look back to last year and what happened in Lubbock, there was talk at that point about him being let go because of what we were able to do, set records against them.
Yeah. So this is a really interesting game because, again, you want to talk about a first-year head coach. If he does, in fact, let his longtime defensive coordinator go, how is the new guy, the interim guy, whoever gets pulled up from a position, position coach standpoint, how is he going to fare going forward when they still have to play Texas Tech and a couple others in a couple weeks? Be really interesting to see how this game goes down, especially with Texas's new freshman quarterback. Is it Sam Ellinger?
Yes.
He put up some really impressive numbers last week.
There was a joke that Texas was just going to have him play both offense and defense like Iowa State did last week.
With Joel Lane.
Against Oklahoma, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. See, I think that's something that you've talked about it multiple times, about something like that is where Texas Tech's going to get tripped up, where we'll play Iowa State and they throw their guy out there, and we were suffocating them for two quarters, and then at halftime they come out with Joel Lanning and we have no idea what's going on.
Right.
Completely flipped the script. And obviously Texas is no longer on Steve, their old quarterback.
Steve Buschel?
Yeah. Sorry. Again, when we record this, everybody, it's kind of late.
It's 10:35 right now.
Yeah. it's not like we're doing this around lunchtime. So names are distant. I see jerseys. I see numbers. Names and faces, not so much. But that's going to be a really interesting one at 2:30. And then, obviously, the other one at 2:30, all early games, so we're going to have awesome Pac-12 after dark action, is Baylor at Oklahoma State. Baylor's looking at their 11th consecutive regular season loss going into Stillwater. Oklahoma State is favored by 26.
Yeah, I keep saying every week I think Baylor gets one. But I don't think it's this week. Baylor's going to surprise somebody.
Kansas? And
no, because that wouldn't be a surprise.
Well, if you look at their remaining schedule, Baylor has Oklahoma State this week, West Virginia next week, then Texas, then Kansas, then Texas Tech, Iowa State, and TCU. An argument can be made that they go 1-11.
And they're going to Kansas, and I think an argument can be made that they go 0-12.
Oh, my goodness. Matt Rhule will be shown the door.
But there's still part of me that thinks they're going to surprise somebody. But I think if this game was in Waco, I may be more leaning towards possibly picking the Bears to upset Oklahoma State, but I don't see it happening this week.
You know, I've been on the receiving end, no matter what team that I've rooted for. My pro team, everybody's going to turn it off, but on the pro team, I'm a Redskin. Love the Redskins. My family's from Virginia, so that's where we grew up. That's the team that I grew up watching. And we were good. We won the Super Bowl the year before the Cowboys started their run. We obviously trailed off, and then a few years later, the Cowboys trailed off. And neither of us have really been the same since. But even during those Dave Campo years with Quincy Carter, absolutely awful for the Cowboys. And some of those years, like '99, Daniel Snyder went out and spent all this money bringing in free agents, and we were expected to make a run to the Super Bowl. I think we got to the divisional game and lost to the Seahawks or Tampa Bay or somebody. But even in those types of years, Dallas could have gone 2-14. And the two games that they would have won would have been against the Redskins, and even if the Redskins went 14-2. I mean, it's that kind of thing with my teams. And heaven forbid, now that you brought it up surprising people, heaven forbid if the 0-12, 1-11 Baylor Bears surprise Texas Tech, I'm going to come to your house and I'm just going to just because you know it's going to happen. You know that's what the Kansas is going to beat them the week before, and they're going to come and look like world beaters against us, and we're going to be like, what in the heck?
Okay, well, if we won the rest of our games, would you be okay with that?
If we won the rest of our games, so we would.
Let's say we go 10-2, but we lose to Baylor. Are you okay with that season?
Yes, but there are going to be some people that are calling for Kingsbury's job regardless because we lost to Baylor.
Yeah, I have close family that are Baylor alum. I have a couple of nephews that are diehard Baylor fans, even though they're only 3 and 6 years old. And I hate that those few years when we kept losing to Baylor. But I would definitely take a 10-2 season with the loss to Baylor.
No, I would too. I don't think there's any real discussion about that other than the emotional side that kind of gets in the way of everything. But do you think Oklahoma State covers the 26 points? Baylor right now is averaging 27 points per game and giving up 36.
That's a good question. Baylor on defense, they're not good. Oklahoma State, I think, will get back to rolling on offense. And, yeah, I think they're going to cover.
Okay. That brings us to our game. 11 o'clock start on ESPNU. I was really hoping for Fox, but it's ESPN2, or ESPNU, sorry. West Virginia is favored by 3.5. I've said it before, I'll say it again, I am not impressed by one single team in the Big 12 this year. There's nobody.
I'm impressed by how bad Baylor is.
Well, yes, but from a positive standpoint, there's not one team. You know, a couple years ago, you could always point to one team like, man, they're good. Kind of like if you're looking at the top 25, you're looking at Clemson and Alabama going, man, they're good. We don't have that team. I haven't thought about
a few weeks ago. Everybody thought both OU and Oklahoma State were going to finish the season with only one loss.
You know, we need to stop using the word everyone, because the national media has said that about Texas Tech's start, about how everyone should be happy with this. No one saw this coming. Some of us saw it coming. And some of us saw that Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, and you are one of them, my friend. So we need to work on a lot of idiots out there thought that Oklahoma State and Oklahoma would be really good.
It's no big deal.
I knew you were gonna do that. That's the inside joke for the night, fellas. We'll let you probably worth a Google on that one, but let's go actual score predictions. What do you got?
I'm taking Tech 37-31.
So a closer one.
Yep, close one. I think defense final stand at the end of the game. They have to. West Virginia has to score a touchdown, and our defense holds them.
Now, the thing that I always believe with defense, especially in a blowout, is you have to hold them under 20 points. Mm-hmm. If it's a close game, you can get, you know, if it's 34-31, 27-24, they can get above 20. But for it to look really good on the scoreboard or the screen, you have to hold them under 20 points. And I told you that about Kansas. I was really worried that they were going to get to 20. And they got to 19, and it looked, and I guarantee you, 65-19 looks better than 65-20. It's just a different crooked number up there. But I don't think we hold them under 20, but I think it's going to be 45-24 Texas Tech.
Oh, okay. I like that.
And I think it's going to be, I don't think it's going to feel that close either. I think it's going to be like 27-7 at halftime.
Ooh.
I think it's going to be
almost a laugher.
Yeah. And it's a little, you know, it's, it gets a little bit.
We finally going to get payback.
Yeah, it's a little bit more even in the second half with West Virginia waking up out of their, we're still in Fort Worth.
Moonshine induced.
Well, we're still in Fort Worth and we should have won that game mentality, and they just too little too late. They put up 17 points in the second half to get to 24, but we're trading blows with them in the second half, and we win 45-24. That's where I have. And that's all we got.
I like it a lot.
We will
see if we've got any big games this week. Nationally.
Actually, I don't think there's that many.
Georgia Tech Miami got postponed. Is there more stuff going on in Florida right now?
I know there's a hurricane called Ophelia bearing down on the British Isles.
UMass,
and if that's not a hurricane,
South Florida was canceled as well.
You didn't get my Shakespeare joke.
No, I didn't. I was ignoring you.
Thanks. I was saying that there's a hurricane slash tropical storm, whatever, named Ophelia, that's bearing down on the British Isles. And that's like Shakespearean irony right there. Because Hamlet's wife, Ophelia, went crazy and killed herself. Anyway, never mind.
Showing your age.
Yeah. I actually really enjoy Shakespeare. Thank you very much.
Again, you're showing your age.
And not just the ones that everybody has to read in high school. Everybody should go read Measure for Measure. That's a good one.
We have some Pac-12 After Dark tomorrow.
Yeah, we Washington have State, baby.
Washington State at Cal on Friday the 13th.
Now I will say, I said that's all we have. That's not all we have. How impressed are you at Mike Leach and Washington State right now?
I don't know that I'm impressed, because I kind of knew it was going to happen.
Well, yes. But I remember going actually on some message blogs a few years ago when Mike Leach was losing to these FCS teams in the first game of the season, like calling for his head, like, we need to fire him, we need to move on. He's a great little stunt. He's got us to 5 wins instead of 2. He's got us to 7 wins instead of 2, but we need to move on. And it came right after, you know, they blew the bowl lead against Colorado State or whatever. I think it was. Whatever. Anyway, and they were saying, I was like, just give it time, patience, kind of like Colorado last year. And he's got the number 18, the 8th team in the country. And they had nothing when he came to town.
No.
Nothing. You want to talk about, like, the cupboard was bare when Kingsbury came. Kingsbury was driving a Ferrari compared to what Mike Leach had to do with Pimp My Ride out there in Pullman. My goodness. It says they're off to their first 6-0 start since 2001. If you want to know about 2001, that was back in the day when the following, I think that year, they actually went and played Oklahoma in the Rose Bowl. That's the last, that's the last time Washington State was this good. Crazy.
They're coming off a big road win in Oregon.
They've beaten Oregon 3 straight seasons.
Yep. Twice in Autzen.
I mean, good night.
And before that, they beat USC at home. They've got Colorado next week. Then they go to Arizona, home against Stanford. Go to Utah, and then 25th of November, they're going to Washington.
They may be undefeated going into that game.
Both teams may be undefeated going into that game.
Huge. Game day will be there.
That could be two 11-0 teams. That's on the 25th, which I think is that the day after Thanksgiving?
Yeah, it's the Friday. We play on that day.
Okay.
No, it's a Saturday.
Okay, so it's a Saturday game. So that'll be a potentially huge game.
Yeah. And, you know, added to rivalry, in-state rivals, the Apple Cup, that's going to be big. But you got Auburn, LSU. Is that a big game?
There's some games that traditionally would look like they'd be big games, but then if you look at the teams, they're not exactly, like Ohio State, Nebraska.
Arkansas, Alabama.
Mm-hmm. And Mizzou and Georgia.
Utah versus USC, Oregon, Stanford.
Boise State, San Diego State could be an interesting game.
Navy versus Memphis is going to be a good game.
So there's I think if Washington loses a game, it could be this week. It would make Tech look fantastic.
Arizona State?
Yeah, they go to Tempe.
Well, Arizona State, I'll give them credit. They have done a little bit more than I thought that they would, beating Oregon. I knew that. You know, I expected them to lose Oregon, Stanford, Washington. We were talking back then that they may not win another game if they don't beat Texas Tech. They actually responded pretty well with a 2-point win over Oregon at home. But it'll be interesting to see how this game goes out. It's in Tempe, right?
Yes.
Okay. Be really, really interesting. So yeah, not a ton of ranked versus ranked games or huge marquee games, but some interesting matchups.
Yeah, it should be a fun weekend of football. All the Big 12 games are early, all done before dinner, unless we have one of those marathon 5-hour games again.
Yeah, if we don't have too many reviews, we'll be all right. We're going to call it on that one, because I think we have talked for over an hour, which is good. But if we didn't get to any topic you thought we were talking about, check out the website. Maybe we wrote an article about it. I know Mike Leach had some comments about expanding the college football playoff. I posted an article from 2 years ago, just updated it about that, about what I think would be a very equitable thing to do. You can go back and see all the players of the week. I wish we had more on previews. We're going to get to that. For some reason, we saved that for Friday, so you'll be seeing a lot of that. And I keep pushing this just because I kind of worked hard on it, but not really, because I didn't do any of the actual film shooting or music writing. I just kind of mashed them together. But I did a hype video for Texas Tech being ranked and playing West Virginia. I'll leave that in the body so you can go click on it and go listen to it. It takes about a minute to get going, and then it's just, I think it's really good. I think you'll enjoy it, to get hyped for this game, get excited. It'll be good. Any closing thoughts, Jonathan?
That's all I've got. Should be a good, fun weekend.
Cool. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening. For Jonathan, I'm Ryan, and this has been the Air Raid Podcast, brought to you by VivaTheMatadors.com.